And Air and Air and D, as well as Big Boy. Just get in line. It moves fast. Joining us on the program now, you'll catch him on the weekends, on Sundays here on Super Talk 1270. Jason Spies from The Crude Life. And Jason, I wanted to talk a little bit about Harold Hamm. You've got an in with Harold that I don't think people realize. He does so many good things around the community, and University of Mary, of course, $12 million donation. You just had an opportunity to have an interview with Harold up on The Crude Life. You seem to have some access, and I don't know if it's Harold in his later years, but he seems to be giving back. He's always given back to the industry, but now he gives back to so many other things around the communities.
That's funny you bring up the Harold Hamm. Of course, our previous text, we were talking a little bit about the ESG and some of the environmental social governance movement that's happening in the world of energy. And this Harold Hamm announcement, of course, couldn't have come at a better time to talk about some of this ESG stuff. Of course, we're talking about the social aspect, which is the giving back. And so in kind of a little bit of a way, this is Continental Resources doing some ESG work by telling their story a little bit more. Because before, a lot of the oil and gas industry, they would do a lot of this stuff, but specifically say, don't make a big deal about it. Don't say anything. Well, now it's changing a little bit to where more of these organizations and more of these individuals and these companies are starting to say there's a benefit to have this type of public transparency to say, hey, look at these good, benevolent things that we're doing for the community because this is how your community is benefiting. And that's what we saw in Oklahoma City when Ken Lavin, the Crude Life content news correspondent, did the interview with Harold Hamm, which will air this Sunday on Super Talk 1270. We're going to re-air that interview once again from a couple weeks ago that we had. Because down in Oklahoma City, he did a similar thing with the Oklahoma State University to help kickstart part of their program, which, in all honesty, he learned a lot of the stuff up here in the Bakken. He learned a lot of the stuff up here. Of course, he's known as the godfather of the Bakken for good reason, because of a lot of the science and a lot of the geology and the engineering, petroleum engineering, that he's brought to the state. And again, what happened yesterday is part of that story, because that donation is going, I believe, to the is it the petroleum engineering geology?
They're building an engineering school, and they're going to broad base out of that. So there's a relationship with UND for the petroleum engineering side of things. It goes a lot of different directions, and UMary is one of those educational institutions that has done a really good job of connecting the dots, of building partnerships, and that's what it's about. You know, you bring up a great point, because the industry has always done this. This is the G side, the giving. The industry has always partnered up within their communities. You take a look at what's happened in Williston and Dickinson and Watford City and other places in the oil patch, or down in Texas in the Permian, the Niobrara, all of these different oil plays, and the industry has always done a really good job of getting into communities, because it's about lifestyle, quality of life for their employees, their employee families, and they always have this mindset of long-term sustainable assets, sustainability. But the difference is, they've always done these things, but nobody's heard about them. Now, is it a question of, okay, they're being forced to toot their own horn, because that's not what they've been good at in the past? They just roll up their sleeves and do it, and that's what the oil industry has always done.
There's a little bit of that. There is. This is going to be a little bit of a growing pain for the oil industry for a couple of reasons. One is that there's still a lot of old school entrepreneurs. They're the ones that they want to show up. They want to do their work. They're not glory hounds. They're not looking for the social media attention. They want to show up. They want to do their work, and they want to spend their time with their kids. They want to go to the ball games. They just want to live a normal quality of life. And traditionally, the oil and gas industry has been awesome at providing that type of a environment to their communities. Now, when we take a look at what's happening with the ESG, it is forcing the oil and gas industry to do some things that are, is outside of their comfort zone. And that is not meant to be a positive or a negative statement. That's just meant to be a factual statement. One of the things we're talking about here is transparency, whether it's donating money and actually having a press conference as opposed to just donating the money and moving on like they would traditionally in the past. That has a lot to do with it, but some of it has to do with the intellectual property, and there is a little bit of, not to make light of the term, but there is a little bit of post-traumatic stress disorder here, because when the oil and gas industry is under the microscope constantly, they are still having to deflect stuff from Exxon Valdez back in the 80s and 90s, whenever that was. The BP, they're still having to deflect PR from that, so... There is a little bit of a, we don't want to say too much because it can be used against us. So there is a little bit of justifiable transparency issues there. Plus, boy, you say a little bit too much. You know, take Joe Theismann yesterday. Joe Theismann, of course, or Theismann, depending on if you're at Notre Dame or if you're with the Washington football team. But Joe Theismann, he leaked that the team is going to be called the Washington Commanders 2 days ago. You start doing that in the world of oil and gas and energy, that's billion-dollar decisions there. That's a, you know what I'm saying? So there's a little bit of shareholders are listening, competition is listening, regulators are listening. So they have to be very careful with what they say, too. The insurance and the banking industry is very similar controlled industries there. So I think yesterday is not only, is it a reason to celebrate for the $12 million gift for the university, is it Mary, right?
University
yep,
of Mary? University of Mary.
I want to say it correctly. I always want to throw Bismarck in there. it's a reason to celebrate, yes, for the gifts, but also for the fact that they were able to feel good about having a press conference on both sides, because this is a new day in oil. A new day in energy. In fact, that's what Harold Hamm talked about in our exclusive interview with the Crude Life, is that it's a new day in industry, and I think yesterday was an example of that.
You know, and it wasn't that long ago that because one of my frustrations in working around the industry for as long as I did in a previous life was trying to get the story out. It was getting the story of, look at the good things that they're doing within a community and helping communities deal with, in North Dakota, some of the pressure of, wow, boom, we got this big oil boom going on. The industry bent over backwards and tried to really help in a lot of those spaces. You take a look at Dakota Access Pipeline, who very quietly helped with the rebuilding of the park on Main Street in Mandan. No small part by the industry pitching in to help improve something within a community. One of the things with Harold is really kind of interesting, because Harold is always an innovator, and I'm looking forward to listening to the program again coming up on Sunday morning on Super Talk 1270. But I remember back, and this is one of my key moments, it was a Continental Resources was a keynote speaker at a conference in Denver that I was chairing. And it was kind of my aha moment, because what's Harold up to? And we were talking about input costs. And I'll finish that story when we come back from the break. We're talking with Jason Spies. You can hear his program, The Crude Life, Sunday mornings on Super Talk 1270. This is Talk of the Town on a Wattage Wednesday. This hour of the program brought to you by A1 Heating and Air and Air ND. I am Steve Bach, and this is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Welcome back to Talk of the Town with Steve Bakken on Super Talk 1270.
You're tuned to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270. I'm your host, Steve Bakken, on a Wattage Wednesday. This hour of the program brought to you by A1 Heating and Air and Air ND, as well as Dvorak Motors, where your family for a lifetime. We're talking with Jason Spies of The Crude Life. You can catch him each and every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. right here on Super Talk 1270. Jason, as we were heading in the break, I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, Harold has been such a longtime innovator and titled the Godfather of the Bakken, because he truly is. I'm in Denver, Colorado, and this is back, I think, about 15, right before the last big drop. And I'm in Denver hosting a conference, a Bakken Oil Conference. And I'm sitting in the back of the room listening to all these presentations, and they're technical presentations. They're about input costs. And the industry at the time was doing everything they could to drive down input costs. If they could get a nickel, 2 cents out of the cost of producing a barrel of oil, that was a win for the industry at the time. And then the Continental Resources engineer stepped up to the podium and started with his presentation. And they were increasing input costs. They were almost $2.47 a barrel. They'd increased their input costs. I'm like, is that right? I'm thinking, and you could just feel the buzz in the room. And I'm thinking to myself, why is Harold doing that? And get talking with the engineer afterwards, and everything was booming at that time. Everything was so beneficial in the oil industry. Money was flush. Harold was putting R&D dollars forward. He was doing the research while the market was good and the money was there to do research and R&D. So then when things recessed in the oil industry, Continental Resources was kind of ahead of the game. But that's the innovator that Harold Hamm is. He's kind of ahead of the game on the ESG side.
Example of where the industry is right now, once again, because what year was that you were talking about again?
It was right before things really crashed. So about a year and a half out ahead of that. So 15.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. All right. And that's when you started seeing some of that R&D dollars put into action. We started to see well pads going from 12 million down to 8 million. And you started to see some of that happen. Now is that next level. And it's a little bit about the big data. And it's a little bit about some of these emission management technologies that are being put into place. Whether, you know, it's caps at the end of pipes or it's Bitcoin or whatever the thing is. This next level of emission management is where you're going to start seeing some of this go. And I do equate it to back then about spending a little bit more money, because what ends up happening is on the back end, you make more because it does. Your projection can't see it yet. And the easiest way to explain this, and this is a very dumbed down version, is look at agriculture. So in the world of agriculture, when you go from just watering your lawn to a drip system, you're reducing anywhere from 70 to 80% of your water. So that is a huge efficiency. Now imagine if that's happening to your emissions. Imagining if that's happening to some of your things with waste. And because they don't know those numbers yet, a lot like they didn't know the numbers back then, and they've got secret files with those numbers, but they can't be public about those numbers. So that's, I think, where we're at. A lot of this is that you're seeing those research dollars move ahead as more of a calculated risk than before. If that makes sense to you, Steve?
It does. And then the funny part was watching the industry when things started to come back a little bit and then research dollars started to be there. Everybody jumped on the train. What's Harold doing? And it's it's kind of like they say in football that imitation is the best flattery. Oil industry as well, with as private and proprietary as the industry is, where do we go with Harold and following along for what's needed? That was really the key, and I watched that take place, and after the contraction and watching oil, I took pictures of oil in the negative numbers per barrel. And who came out of that first? Where did that go after that? And it was Continental Resources leading the way as usual. You know, we're coming up on another break here, and I want to give you just a few seconds for a quick little teaser, because I do want to get into ESG University. Talk ESG, something that you are so good at explaining correctly. So little teaser as we head into the break.
You bet. We're going to talk about what Mercedes-Benz is doing in the world of ESG, because that is relatable to the world of oil and gas.
Perfect. When we come back, we're going to talk about Mercedes-Benz ESG. ESGU with Jason Spies. You can catch him Sunday mornings on The Crude Life right here on Super Talk 1270, 10 a.m. Well worth the listen. When we come back, we'll talk ESG with Jason Spies. I'm Steve Bakken on a Wattage Wednesday. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Talk of the Town with Steve Bakken on Super Talk 1270.
It's a final
70. Talk of the Town with Steve Bakken on Super Talk 1270.
You're tuned to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270 on a Wattage Wednesday. Good morning. I'm Steve Bakken on Super Talk 1270. This hour, the program brought to you by Big Boy. Just get in line. It moves fast. And A1 Heating and Air and Air ND. We're talking with Jason Spies. The Crude Life, you can catch it Sunday mornings right here on Super Talk 1270, 10 a.m. And we're going to get into ESG. Jason, you are the guy.
Environmental social governance, yes.
You are the guy when it comes to ESG, all things ESG, a little bit of a ESGU, and you talk about it on your program quite frequently on Sunday mornings with The Crude Life, but delving into it, Mercedes-Benz, what are they currently doing in the space?
So here's how we decided to fold in Mercedes-Benz in The Crude Life with ESG University. And the way we try to do it is, you know, we try to focus on the environment, and then the next session focuses on maybe a social side, try to keep it within the verticals so that it doesn't get too complex or too out there. So when we're talking about some of the environmental things, of course, when we're in the oil and gas sector, flaring, emission management, that's the big topic, that's the one people can point at, etc., right? So when everybody's going after that, there's other ways that we can reduce emissions, and there's other ways that we can really tackle these environmental concerns that are not low-hanging fruit, okay? Now, when we talk about vehicles, a way that they're trying to sell the reduction of greenhouse gases and et cetera is electric vehicle cars. Now, Steve, we're not going to get into the whole mining and the manufacturing of the EV cars. That's for a different day. But for the lack of better terms, the reduction of greenhouse gases and the climate change is going to, the EV cars are going to help, right? Okay. So rather than have Mercedes-Benz go after that EV market, which they probably don't have the upper hand like an Audi or a Tesla or even a Ford, I understand, is making some decent.
Yeah, the F-150s are phenomenal,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, they're starting to come out with some things. Exactly. So rather than go that direction, Mercedes-Benz has gone a different direction. It really caught my eye because of the oil and gas industry. So much of the oil and gas industry is manufacturing. Okay, whether it's powering the plant itself or actually creating the equipment that's used out in the field, the hardware, right? So I looked a little bit more into it. And get this, Steve. The steel industry, the emissions from the steel industry, according to the International Energy Agency, equals about 9% total of all the emissions. So the steel industry is a huge contributor to the quote-unquote climate change, right? So what Mercedes did is they went after that. They reinvented how they are manufacturing steel. Interesting, huh?
Very.
Yeah. So what's ended up happening is they are actually going to more of an electric manufacturing of steel away from those big open hearth ovens like we traditionally see before. And so when you start thinking about things like that, now we're talking about, in my opinion, is the crux of the ESG, which is Mercedes-Benz said, okay, we're not going to compete with Tesla in the EV battery market. We're not even going to compete with Ford. We're going to go out, we're going to grab our own narrative and tell our own story how we're making the world a better place. And that's what I saw Continental Resources do yesterday. That's what I'm starting to see more oil and gas companies do, is say, we're going to control our narrative instead of react. We're going to control what and by control, demonstrate. This is not like some, you know, Monty Burns evil doer here. No, this is actually, we're gonna celebrate how we're helping the community. We're gonna celebrate how we're transitioning out of this old mindset and into this new mindset. Much like you talked about with your experience in Denver, your aha moment where you noticed, okay, we've gone from horse and buggy to automobiles. That's what's going on, Steve. That's what's happening.
You know, when I look at it, is leadership is leading, not following. Great example with Mercedes-Benz. They're going in a different direction. They're leading in a direction that nobody's looked at. The low-hanging fruit is like, oh, yeah, oil and gas and coal, and it's all bad. It's bad. We got to get rid of it. But what's the path to make it better? And that's where innovation comes in, because we can improve on all kinds of things. We can make all kinds of things better, but you need that reason. You need that incentive instead of just going after the low-hanging fruit. From an environmental side, it's like, okay, the low-hanging fruit, let's get rid of fossil fuels. But you have to create the path by which there's sustainability. And the one thing that's always driven me a little bit crazy when it comes to the environmentalist side of things is it's all or nothing. There's no concept of how to make improvements. We have clean coal technology. You can't implement it because of some of the constrictions that the EPA and different government alphabet agencies have put into things. There's no pathway to improve. It's just all or nothing. And that's the thing that's always driven me crazy, because the innovation is there, the technology is there, but the ability to implement it is always not.
And that is one of the dangerous places we're going. You know, we've talked about this before, you and I have, off the air, which is, you know, are we going into a world where feelings are replacing fact? Okay, and I'll explain one of the reasons why I say that, because at the Crude Life, we've tried very hard to be non-political. And what I mean by that is we'll have politicians on, and, you know, we'll talk policy, but we're not going to incite, we're not going to bring in polarizing language, and we're not going to try to do these types of things that do get ratings. Let's be honest. They do get ratings, you know, and that sort of thing. But the reason we've stayed the course to be non-political and non-polarizing is mostly because in oil and gas, you're dealing with science. And as soon as you introduce politics or even money or any sort of special interest into science, it's no longer science. You've put poison into the well. And that's one of the reasons we tried to keep non-political as long as we have, because I truly believe a lot of this stuff is science and it's working itself out when it comes to a lot of this oil and gas and ESG environmental stuff. That's what I'm getting at.
So, and that's where you bring up a great point, Jason, is that division between policy and politics.
Yeah.
That line gets blurred, and it's never a good outcome.
Politicians and lawyers should be trumping scientists. I don't think so. No, I do not think so.
Hey, you got to base that policy off of good science, and that's where the industry can really step up and lead, and then they get a black eye for trying to do that, and that's where all these lines are so blurred, Jason, that it's hard to pull fact from fiction nowadays, because everything, like you said, it's about clickbait. It's about the clicks. It's not about what's the facts.
Well, you know, the great philosopher Stephen Colbert, like he said, truthiness. Well, it sounds right. It's truthy, right? So it's kind of, you know, I mean, it's kind of where we're at. I hate to say it, but
yeah,
I know we're up against the clock, and so I just wanted to mention one thing. You know, that we've seen this, of course, before in some other industries, and they're going to get through it. And what I think is really exciting is that we are going to have a cleaner path when we're done, because you are seeing these investments happen. So right now you're seeing the investments. Next year is when you're going to see the result of these investments happen, and it's going to be so cool. I mean, the people I'm talking to in Wyoming, Colorado, Oklahoma, and Texas, they are so excited because they are finally, for the first time, getting to implement and execute their crazy science projects that they've been working on for 10 years because a lot of the operators have money now.
Yeah, the R&D yeah. side is coming back, and that's the one good thing. And we talked a little bit earlier last hour in the program about the tipping point and where the industry is comfortable versus where it really checks into the pocketbook and damages the economy. And we're on the upper end of that right now. So that comes back to some of the policy discussions, and we could go on for hours and hours and hours, Jason. Thanks for coming on. As always, you can catch Jason Spies with The Crude Life on Sunday mornings on Super Talk 1270. 10 seconds, last pitch, Jason.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the time. As always, check out thecrudelife.com.
Perfect, my friend. Crude Life, you can catch it Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. right here on Super Talk 1270. I'm Steve Bakken. Coming up on Thursday, boys hockey, Jamestown at Century.